there's a very fascinating method that has interesting repercussions for our political situation. You know, normally our claim to Eretz Yisrael is based on divine promise. Hashem promised it to Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, therefore it is ours. However, there are three areas in Eretz Yisrael where our claim, at least if you accept the Tanakh as valid history, is not based on any divine promise. Purchase. It's based on a literal purchase. And that is Hebron, or at least Maras HaMachpelah. We bought it. It's ours. The Shechem, because it says Yaakov Avinu, when he returns from Laban's house, by Shechem, the Meyakasita. And finally, the Harabayas that David HaMelech purchased from Aravna the Yavusi at the end of Shmuel Beis. So the Medrash says the following, Galoi v'yadua, l'fnei mi she'amar v'haya olam. It was known by the Almighty that these would be the areas of Eretz Yisrael that would be most contested by the Umos HaOlam. They would say that Hashem rejected us, Hashem has a new covenant, Hashem made a new bris either with Yashgar or Mohammed, and therefore he wants our claim to go beyond spiritual promise and actually be based on legal purchase. So indeed, if you think about it, certainly the Harabayas, Chevron, and Shechem too. You know, Yosef's Kever, according to our Masorah, Yosef's Kever is in Shechem. The Arabs believe it's in Chevron. And, the desecration there and everything else. So it's interesting that apparently, even with our claim of purchase, it's lo mas pik, but nevertheless, it would have even been worse. Another interesting Ha'ara, again, this is a side point, it's not the main thing I want to talk about, is Vayavo Avraham lispod l'sarav l'pchosa. So first of all, there is a real problem here. At the time of the, according to Chazal that Rashi brings, Sarah died in response to her news about the Akedah. She died out of shock. That's how we know Yitzchak was 37 at the time of the Akedah, because Sarah died at 127, right after the Akedah. Yitzchak was born when she was 90, hence Yitzchak was 37. That's also how we know Rivka was 3, according to that Medrash, because Rivka seems to have been born right after the Akedah, and we know that Yitzchak was 40 when he married Rivka. Of course, people always ask, how can you have a three-year-old, drawing water? But, you look in the makolas around Yerushalayim, you get a sense. Indeed, the three-year-olds seem to be doing shopping sometimes, so I don't know. So all of these things are indeed possible. Unlike Americans, we don't do anything until we're 18 or so,
And even then,
but okay. But what's interesting is, the question is, though, that at the time of the Akedah, Abraham is living in Beersheba, the land of the Plishtim. In fact, after the Akedah, it says, V'yakumu v'yelchu yachdav el Beersheba. So the question is, why did Sarah die in Hebron? If Abraham, and he was already living in Beersheba, in fact, according to Rashi, Abraham had been living in Beersheba for 26 years, basically. In other words, the first 25 years of Biyat HaAretz was in Hebron. And then after Yitzchak's birth, they moved to Beersheba, right? So that's the land of the Plishtim. So why is Sarah in Hebron? So there is an explanation that Rabbi Steinzel gives, which I'm not going to represent it as Masorah because I think we would normally not accept it. But they basically he wants to learn on Peep Shot that maybe Sarah did not die right after the Akedah. She died a little bit later. And when she became aware that Avram was willing to kill Yitzchak, he says she literally separated from him. She went back to Hebron. He actually says there was a period, there was a severe
marital crisis
because of what he was going to do to Yitzchak. But again, as I say, that doesn't seem to be the Masorah. And in fact, many Mephorshim learn the Medrash exactly the opposite. When it says that Sarah died because of the shock of the Akedah, they learn that when she saw them coming back, she died because chas v'shalom, perhaps they didn't have the nerve and the strength to fulfill Hashem's nisayon. Not that she died because of the shock that Yitzchak almost got killed. She died because how can it be that they didn't do the mitzvah? Okay, be it as it may, it's possible. Just I'll peep shot. I think some Mephorshim say this. That Avraham never really lived in Beersheba, that Avraham's residence in Beersheba was essentially his grazing territory with his flocks and the like. So he spent a lot of time in Beersheba, but the household, per se, was always in Hebron, and Sarah was the Akeret HaBayis, and she stayed in Hebron. That could be an explanation. I'll be pshat. But be it as it may, it does mention that Avram came back to Hebron, to Kiryas Arba. What does it say? Lispod l'Sara, to eulogize Sarah, v'libkosa, and to cry over her. The Nitziv in the Hamikdavar points out that in the sequence of Avelus that Chazal normally describe, they describe Bechi as the very first thing. As soon as one is faced with a devastating loss, they cry in pain. Only later are they able to compose their thoughts in eulogy. So the normal sequence would be Bechi and then Hespet. And yet with Abraham, it is Hespet and then Bechi. And the Nitziv explains, because there's two types of crying. There is the spontaneous outpouring of grief, which is an emotional response. But then, as you think about what this person meant to you and what the person meant to the world, and you're able to articulate, and that's called hespet, then there's a deeper bechi. It is not just a spontaneous emotion, but it's an emotion that comes from a true understanding of what the person is. So the bechi that comes after hespet is actually a much more significant bechi, because it's a recognition of what the person was. It's reminiscent of a very famous Gemara in Brachos. It's famous because it is actually said at many levayas, many hespedim, that when the great Amora Rav died, right? Rav was the Gadol Hador in Babel. So the Talmidim, they all ripped their garments. In fact, you may have noticed if you were at Rav Avadya's Levaya that quite a few people, you know, ripped their garment, because a Rebbe that is the source of most of your Chachma is like a father that you actually rip Kriya over. So they all ripped Kriya over Rav. And then as they're walking back from the funeral, from the Levaya, from the Kavura, they stop at a riverbank to eat bread. They had to eat something. And they were not halachically sure if that type of temporary stop creates a group and a cohesiveness that would allow them to be mezame. Now this one's eating here, this one's... Could they form a group? So somebody said, without thinking, oh, we have to ask Rav that question. But then, a second later, like a person wakes up, sometimes it happens, people who lost spouses often describe they wake up and they assume for the first, like, tenth of a second, they assume the person's there, and then the memory comes back. So the memory came back. We don't have Rav anymore. And they ripped their garment again because they said, Rav has left us, and we don't even know the laws of benching. There was so much we don't know, we didn't learn, that we weren't able to get from him. And that's kind of the second level mourning. Not the spontaneous grief, but the mourning that comes when one realizes the loss. And that is lispod l'sara. From the hespid comes a new level of bechi. But the word libkosa, if you look in a chumash in a sefer Torah, you will notice there is a small chaf, a tiny chaf. Again, in the Torah there are, you know, different times when you have big letters and times when you have small letters. This is halachal moshe b'sinai, and indeed a sefer Torah is possible if you don't have those different letters, and normally we don't know the reason. I mean, sometimes we do know the reason. For example, for Shema, the most familiar one is the ayin of Shema and the dalet of Echad are big. They spell aid, you're giving testimony. Also, the Torah had concern for nearsighted balei kriya, that the dalet of Echad has to be big, because otherwise you might read it like a resh, and God forbid it would say Hashem Acher, there are other gods, etc. So it's a big, big talit. Vayikra is a small aleph. Rashi actually brings a medrash, because without the aleph, you would read it Vayikar, Hashem happened to meet Moshe. Moshe in his anava didn't want to say a lashon that God is looking for him, but Vayikar, God happened to bump into him. All right. So we don't necessarily have reasons for most of them. But the Baal HaTurim says the following idea. He says, the reason why there's a small chaf is because although Avraham cried for Sarah, he didn't cry a lot because she was a zakena. She was old. So she was old. She was 127 years old. So the question is, of course, number one, it seems a little strange that Avraham wouldn't cry a lot for her. But number two, why does the Torah mention it? In other words, what? If, you know, Naniach, if that was the case, why would that be important for us to know? Why would it be important to make a point of it? So it could be that the Balaturim is Merames to a Medrash in Koheles. He doesn't quote it, but it is a very famous Medrash in Koheles. Koheles is Shlomo Melech's meditation on life. It is often quite depressing in different ways. It's interesting that we read it, Siman Simchoteinu, during Sukkot. But one of the things that Shlomo Melech says is, Tov acharis dovor mireshiso, which means the end of the matter is better than the beginning. And the Medrash gives a very famous parable. Again, this is often said at Olivaya, but it's relevant to the Balaturim's comment. Is, let's imagine you have a ship going out to voyage to engage in exploration and commercial enterprises. So normally these ships were given big send-offs. You know, they break the champagne bottle and they have streamers and the like. And when it comes back, laden with goods, people don't even notice when it comes back. That's just a daily occurrence. But the Medrash says, really, the opposite ought to be the case. Because when the ship embarks onto the unknown, who knows how successful it'll be? There ought to be trepidation. And when it comes back with all of its goods, there's been success. Same thing the Medrash says when a baby is born. It's the same paradox. Everybody celebrates the birth of a new baby, the potential. But on the other hand, you know, who knows what this child will become? A good person, God forbid a bad person, a long life, or again, God forbid a short life, holiness or the opposite, who knows? And yet, when a person dies, and a person did live a life of shlemus and a life of kedusha and a life of goodness, although, of course, we mourn because of our loss, but there can be, in a sense, at least a muted joy that this was a life that was well-lived and a life that accomplished its mission. In a sense, life is a journey away from our point of origin. Our point of origin is HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shemayim. And therefore, Shlomo HaMelech says, the end could be better than the beginning, because the beginning is so unknown, and the end could be known. So this could be what the Baal HaTurim is saying. In other words, as opposed to simply saying, she was an old woman who cares, which is hardly the way Avraham would feel. But in a sense, Avraham's grief was not overwhelming.
They were obviously separated.
Well, that's his pshat. Okay, I mean, I'm not endorsing. I thought it was very interesting, but I'm not endorsing that pshat. But in fact, there's another pshat that's very popular in the modern Orthodox world, and that is Avraham failed the Akedah. People ask the famous question, how come Avraham argues with Hashem about Sodom, and he doesn't argue about Yitzchak? So there is a Mahalach, I think Rabbi Riskin popularized it, that, yeah, Avram's test was that he should have protested with Hashem, and he didn't. Now, again, it's an interesting psychological question, but obviously it is not the Mesorah of Chazal that that's the case. If every single day in the Korbanos part of Davening, and on Rosh Hashanah, in the Zichronos, we ask Hashem to remember the willingness of Avraham Avinu to sacrifice his son Yitzchak, then obviously the assumption is that this was a great thing. Not only that, the Chumash itself, what does the Chumash say? Lo chasachta. Lo chasachta esbincha, you did not hold back your son. So I don't think we can accept that. Of course, it is an interesting question. Why doesn't Avraham argue? And I'll give you two short answers for that. I mean, answer number one is that that in the case of Sodom, Avram was not given any command. He was just given news. Hashem is informing him of what he's going to do. So Hashem informs you. Avram could reasonably conclude that Hashem wants to engage in a discussion, in a dialogue. And therefore, Avram sees it as his role to invoke mercy and justice. On the other hand, when you're given a frontal command, you don't question command. You don't question your orders, like in the military, you know. If the general is simply discussing strategy, so maybe the enlisted guy can come up with something. When there's a direct order, there's no argumentation there. That's one answer. Another answer that is given is that Avraham felt, this is maybe a little more difficult, that he could argue for Sodom on the basis of purely spiritual considerations, because it didn't directly affect him. But when it was his own child, he felt that his status to argue was compromised by the fact that some of it would be his own natural love, and it wouldn't necessarily be totally L'shem Shemayim. So there are differences. So one explanation of the Baal HaTzur, once again, is that he didn't cry because she was old, meaning to say old in the sense that her life was filled with goodness and accomplishment, and therefore, in a sense, she completed her mission. She did what she needed to do. But some want to say a halakhic explanation, which is very, very extremely far-fetched in pshat, but it's interesting in terms of halakha. So many of you might know these halakhas, but I'll mention it because the way it's brought in. And that is, according to Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer, the Akedah actually occurred on Yom Kippur, not on Rosh Hashanah. The mainstream of davening puts it on Rosh Hashanah, which is why we read the Akedah on the second day of Rosh Hashanah. But Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer says it happened on Yom Kippur. And by the time Sora got the news, etc., and died, it is recorded she was buried on Erev Sukkos. Of course, there was no Sukkos, there was no Yom Kippur yet, but you know, the Avos kept this pattern of Torah before it was given. Now, what is the halacha in terms of Shiva and Shloshim, right? There's mourning for 7 days, and then another 23 days, Shloshim. How do you calculate it? So it's very interesting that when a kavura is Erev Yom Tov, even if one sits Shiva, really just 5 minutes before Yom Tov,
right,
the halacha is Shiva gets canceled. Now, in other words, the coming of the Yom Tov annuls the need to sit Shiva. As opposed, for example, if the burial is during, not on Yom Tov, we don't do it, but if it's on Chol HaMoed, the person has to sit Shiva, whole Shiva, after Yom Tov. So if it's 2 minutes before Yom Tov, Shiva is canceled. If it's 2 minutes after Yom Tov, at that point there's going to have to be a Shiva after Yom Tov, totally. Now, the Gemara has a twist on this, which is not intuitive, but the Gemara extends it, and that is, the concept of Shiva being canceled doesn't just mean Shiva is canceled. It means that momentary period counts as 7 days towards the Shloshim. In other words, the 5 minutes of mourning equals 7 days towards your Shloshim account. So the way it works is the following. So if somebody had a kavura, Erev Sukkos, so Erev Sukkos counts for 7 days towards Shloshim. There's no Shiva at all, other than the 5 minutes, but Erev Sukkos is 7 days. Sukkos is 7 days. The 7 days of Sukkos count towards Shloshim. Now, Shemini Atzeres, this is another oddity in halacha. Since Shemini Atzeres is called a Yom Tov, even though it's only a one-day Yom Tov, but it's called a Chag, it is given in Hilchos Avelos the status of 7 days. So in effect, therefore, the 1 day of Shemini Atzeres equals another 7 days. So in effect, when there's a Kavura Erev Sukkos counts for seven, Sukkos counts for seven, Shemini Atzeres counts for seven, let's say in Eretz Israel, so that's 21 days, so you only have to keep 9 days, really 8 days and a little bit, after Sukkos to finish Shloshim. So in reality, your Shloshim as a Shloshim is really only 17 days. It's 7 days of Sukkos and nine, or 16 days, right? But the 16 days count for Shloshim. Again, it's an unusual count that Shemini Atzeres has this 7 days thing factored in. So some want to say that since Avram had an abbreviated Shloshim, so therefore the small chaf is Merames, that his Bechi was not complete. Because Shloshim is identified as the Zman of Bechiah. He had a truncated Shloshim. Again, I mean, as in terms of Pshat, it's certainly not Pshat, but still it's an interesting halachic perspective about this. Okay. The main subject of the parsha, of course, is that after Sora dies, Avraham Avinu now feels the imperative to find a wife for Yitzchak. And there's a bit of a dilemma, of course, because Avram does not want Yitzchak to marry anyone from the Canaanites, including the daughter of his faithful servant, Eliezer. We'll discuss why that is so. It has to be from his family, from his land. On the other hand, apparently, the way Rashi and the Midrashim explain, Yitzchak himself is not allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael because he was sanctified as a korban. So unlike Avram, who went to Mitzrayim, and unlike Yaakov, of course, who spent many, many years in loved one's house, Yitzchak never leaves Eretz Yisrael. I mean, he goes to Eretz Plishtim. Eretz Plishtim is still Eretz Yisrael.
Just one thing.
Yeah.
I
Avraham does not say from his family.
Eliezer
adds that.
That's correct. I'll talk about that. That's exactly what I'm going to be talking about. Yeah, yeah. But his land, Avram said his land.
Yes,
yeah, that's correct. That is correct. But be it as it may, so because of this, he designates a shaliach, so to speak, to go and find a wife from the appropriate place. By the way, Chaim Leibowitz always like to point out how some Midrashim are so familiar to us that we would virtually swear they are in the Chumash itself, and it's almost like our minds see it in the Chumash. It's important to note that it says nowhere in Chayesara that Eliezer did this. It just calls a man called Eved Avraham. How good. It's not illogical to say, well, that's the only other Eved we know of, but Eliezer's name is not mentioned, and that itself is worthy of note. Why Eliezer's name is not mentioned. We think we see it there. It's not there. I'll discuss why that is so. Now, Chazal already remarked in Maseches Chulin about the extraordinary level of repetition in these narratives. We have a whole conversation Avraham has with Eliezer. We then have Eliezer devising a test to choose the right woman. And then we have Eliezer telling this over to Lavan. Well, first Besuel, then Lavan. Again, Rashi adds the detail that Besuel died right then because Lavan wanted to poison Eliezer to take his wealth, and it got switched, and Besuel died, so Lavan takes over. So actually, technically, Rivka was married off by her brother, not her father. But be it as it may, the Torah could have just said, basically, in other words, what happened here? Avram has a conversation. Eliezer devises a test. We're then told how the test was carried out. Now, it could have just said, and it happened like Eliezer wanted. And it could have then said, and Eliezer told Lavan or Besuel everything that happened. And yet, everything is repeated over and over and over again. Why is there so much repetition? So the Gemara doesn't offer an explanation other than to say the following. Yafeh Sichasan shel avdei avos, yoser mitayrasan shel banim. That even the casual conversation of the slaves of our patriarchs is more beloved to Hashem than all sorts of halachos, because many, many halachos in the Torah are derived from a word, from a letter, because the Torah is not going to communicate in a sentence that which it communicate in a word.